Welcome one, welcome all to another edition of the Wolves Fancast. Recording this shortly after what was our 15th league loss of the season to Tottenham in what was an awe-inspiring game. Not really. Joining me today, Matt, Kim and George. First off, in the spirit of Mental Health Awareness Week, just want to ask you all, how are you all doing? Matt, how are you doing?
Right, mate, not too bad. It's been a busy old work week and I've been getting my green fingers on and sorting everything out in the garden. It's been quite therapeutic and that game helped keep me in that low adrenaline, looking forward to going to bed kind of mantra.
Was it almost like a mindfulness thing for you to help keep the mood low?
I thought I'd subscribe to premium Headspace.
Kim, how are you doing?
Not too bad. Had my Pfizer vaccine last night, so yeah, feeling the effects, and it meant that I actually fell asleep through the game today. So I'm not sure if that's the effects of the vaccine or the game, and I've come to the conclusion it's a little bit of both, I think.
Going through the dodgy 48-hour spell, aren't you?
Yeah.
How was 48-hour spell the match, George? How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right, thank you. I mean, I'm much better now that 90 minutes is over. Other than that, it's been a solid enough week. Feels like we're starting to roll back into normal, and from tomorrow, apparently, we can hug everyone.
So, apparently, there's a careful hug.
And if you're single, you're going to go and have casual sex, according to Boris as well. So, there you go. Knock yourselves out on Tinder.
Well, that game certainly didn't get our pecker up, let's be honest. So we might as well just delve straight into it. Team news, best place to start as always. We had a handful of changes actually from the Brighton game, some enforced, some not so enforced. So Pedence come out of the team, is injured again, probably something that might explain he's in different form, but he's now going to be out for the remainder of the season, or what's left of it, with a groin injury. So hopefully that's sorted out for next season. Dendonka came in for Neves. Sace came in for Kilman, and then Lord Kilman, King Kilman, might I add. And then the interesting switch was Semedo had come in for Aitnori at left back. Matt, when you saw the team, tell me your initial thoughts, your concerns or your worries when you saw the team.
Well, I did think that it was strange on the back of good performances from both Kilman and Aitnori. I can understand the logic, though, of trying to keep Gareth Bale at bay by moving your most experienced of your wing-backs to the left-hand side to keep him at bay. So I've got no issue with that, really. And it's at this point of the season, which we've all cried out for, to give some of the youth some experience, and Hoover's hasn't really had a lot of game time. So, to be honest, whilst it was a bit of a shock, and if this was one of the first games or midway through the season, I'd have been a bit more concerned. But we've asked for changes, we've asked for the youth, and we got it to some degree. But then Sace plays, which was the strange one, because he's not been in glistening form as of late either, and Kilman didn't do a lot wrong to deserve dropping, to be honest. Mm. So, I don't know, strange one really, but par for the course. We're going to see some odd lineups now to see if something sticks going into the pre-season.
Kim, is that how you see it? Do you see that it's going to be a bit more experimental with the lineups now for the next two games? With the Semedo on the left wing or left wing back either?
I was kind of expecting another sort of youthful team, but just to, you know, I mean, the same really. I was quite disappointed that Kilman and Aitnori being, you know, I think two of our best players against Brighton. I think they deserved another start, in my opinion. And I've wrote down in my notes here, I think my gut reaction was that Semedo probably should have come back into the team. But for me, I would have started him at right back. I think he clearly is more comfortable at right back being right footed. And I think that the balance of the team would have been better if we'd have just started with Semedo at right back and Aitnori at left back, because I still don't think that Hoover in the long term will be a wing back for me. I think I'd like to see him at centre back now. Fair enough, maybe not in a two right now, but Yeah, I think long term, he doesn't look comfortable at right back. So I was a bit disappointed. Although I'm happy for Nuno to be a bit experimental. I did think that both Kilman and Aitnuri should have started.
George, were you happy the fact that Moutinho seems to have got the nod over Neves? And do you also think that it was the right thing to do as well to have Semedo as coming in for Aitnuri, left wing back or left back rather?
I think it's horses for course at the moment in the middle of the park, between the three of them. I think Neves looks shattered against Brighton because he's been doing a lot of dog work all season for me. Like, if what you led to believe, what you're reading about Moutinho going back to Porto on a free in summer, it might just be swan song and trying to give him a few games to say thank you. I thought I'm a big fan of Dendonka, but I think for the last 12 months he's been crap. To be honest with you, I think he's in between. I don't think he knows what he is anymore in terms of. I don't know if he's a midfielder. I don't know if he's a defender who plays midfield or a midfielder who plays at the back. I've got no idea what he is. When it comes to the Semedo decision, I understand the rationale behind it, but this is sort of the frustration of what people have with Nuno at the minute, and it's about that we're more concerned about what the opposition will do than actually just backing ourselves and backing ourselves to what we do well, and that's our route to winning a game. Like, Aitnuri for me has been unbelievable for the last 3-4 games he's played. Like, absolutely, I think he's worth every penny of that £20 million that we've got to pay to buy him. And to see him just drop today for me and put Semedo out there, like, it's just going to knock his confidence again. Like, and I just don't understand really that selection at all. Like, I'm not a big fan of Kilman, I've said it a few times. I know that Pricey, you are like number one fan, and I know Kim's a big fan as well. But like, he did nothing wrong against Brighton at all. And then if Kilmore would have come out the team for Bolly, you understand that. But for Saez to come back in for Kilman, I'm lost for words. I've got nothing to say. I'm completely lost for words. Kilman,
It'd be a weird boyfriend, wouldn't he, Nuno? You just leave you for a minute's notice and you think, what have I done? I don't know what I've done. Tell me what I've done, Nuno.
It'd leave you on red, wouldn't it? You've had a nice day. You've gone to San Carlos. You've had like a nice evening together. And then he'd leave you on red for 3 days afterwards.
Definitely left Kilman on red, hasn't he?
100%.
Kilman's still going, what have I done? Look at his phone. I'm still waiting, Nuno. I'm still waiting for him to get back to me. We'll get into the game now. So, I mean, let's be honest, it wasn't exactly like, no one's going to be rushing out to buy the DVDs, Blu-rays, Betamaxes, whatever, this game. It was a pretty shoddy affair. But, I mean, first half, Matt, would you agree that Traore was our, by far, our best attacking outlet that first half?
It looked like he was the best attacking outlet. And to be honest, I was surprised at how flaccid the Spurs defending was to allow him to run on, but I guess they were relying on the fact that it was only Silva running with him, looking to make today any chances, and he'd pass it off to his right, give it to Silva, and Silva would be marked pretty tightly, and he has to get a shot away that was pretty tame, and that happened a few times. He had a shot on target pretty early, Silva, but it was never going in. It was always going to be covered by the keeper. It looked exciting in parts because it's always good to see Traore run at defenders, but at the same time, it never really threatened. Do you know what I mean? It was all sizzle, no steak.
Fart, no shit, and all that stuff.
You got it.
Kim, our defending was better though at set pieces. I mean, that was clear to see. And I think we had a bit of the Conor Cody show, didn't we? First half, he was imperious.
I think he was just blocking everything, wasn't he? I mean, I think in all seriousness, up until the goal, he was like one of his better performances, I think, this season. He's been very up and down for me, but I think he really looked like, it felt like, are they actually going to, put in a good defensive performance? Now, I think we did in the first half, apart from, when we were dropped too high and then obviously let Harry Kane in. But then obviously second half, which I'm sure we'll come on to in a minute, it was not a good performance at all. I think first half, It's hard to sum it up, isn't it? Because I don't think Spurs were at the races. And I think the few times that they did get in, it was down our left-hand side because Semedo was getting caught out. No fault of his own, because I think he was out of position. And Morgan Gibbs-White, again, we've said on the chat many a time that his best position is behind the striker. So, yeah, for me, I think it's hard to sum up that performance in the first half other than, we were never going to score. We looked tidy for like a few minutes on the ball, but then, I felt like we could have played all night and we wouldn't have scored. So,
before I get onto the goal, George, what was your thoughts on Vitinha? Because I think he was having a bit of a stinker, wasn't he, especially in the first half?
Yeah, it looked like, and again, like I was shouting for us to sign him, especially after the Albion game as well. Yeah. For me today, he looked like a 14-year-old playing Sunday League football. Like it was bouncing off his shins, couldn't trap a bag of cement, could he? And that's the where you got to have the patience with him. I thought that they're a solid team, Spurs are, and Højbjerg, just dominating, didn't he? He was like a man versus boy, unfortunately, and that's just the truth of it. There's a lot of talent in there, but I thought that was his worst performance in a Wolves shirt for me. He looked a bit lost and, he should have been one of the ones to come off, but then you look at the bench and you're like, who are we putting on? It's just so, I'm just so done with this season. I'm sick of it, honest to God. Like, I'm sick of doing this
end podcast it now.
At the minute for now, because it's just, there's nothing positive. I don't want to be negative, but it's just the game. The first half, I thought, in parts, we were quite tidy. But I did say, I just don't see where we're scoring a goal. We had no threat. Like, we were tidy in parts. I thought Morgan Gibbs-White played quite well in fits and starts as well in that first half. And I think a lot of credit's got to go to, and I know he's been getting a lot of pelters for me, end of game. We know his limitations. But I thought Connor Cody, he's won man of the match, but I thought he was superb today, especially in that first half as well. Like, blocking everything, getting his body on the line. And people are going to look at him now for the goal that Kane scored, that maybe he could have done a little bit more. But for me, you can't play that high of a line without putting pressure on the ball. Like the line's way too high. And again, tactically, I just think we're really naive.
So whose fault? Who are we pointing the finger at then for that goal? Because it seems there's a couple of people who potentially could be at fault.
I think you've got to look at it as a collective. Like, obviously, the tactic was to play a slightly higher line. But you've got to be able to press. You've got to be out putting pressure on the ball and pressing the midfield. It was so easy for, I think it was Højbjerg as well, wasn't it? He put the ball in. It's so easy for that defence splitting pass. And the line isn't, they're not all in the line. It's not the worst line you've ever seen. But that for me is tactically, it's just not, that for me is just, again, schoolboy. Like, if you're not applying pressure on the ball, naturally you've got to sit another 5-10 yards a bit deeper to not allow that to happen. And Harry Kane's not going to miss a chance like that.
Go on, Kim, what do you want to say?
I think we're kind of forgetting, right, that how many strikers in the Premier League would, get in that position and score. I just think the way the touch and the way that he just coolly slotted it in, I'm not sure that any other, maybe Mo Salah, Kane, I think we're underestimating the way that he made the run and put it away, in my opinion.
Yeah, but you can't be. But
yeah, I get. It was bad defending. But what I'm saying is, we'd have probably got away with it, wouldn't we? Against most strikers.
Possibly, but that's what I mean. You can't leave. That's what I'm trying to say is, if you're not going to apply pressure on the ball, you can't leave like a 20, 25 yard gap between the defenders and the goalie.
No, I'm not.
One of world class as Harry Kane, just about to go in, and he always took the goal well, hasn't he? Sometimes you've got to hold your hands up, but it's just really naive. I think it was just a real disappointing goal to concede, especially on the stroke of half-time.
I think it was disappointing because we were just so resolute, and it felt like, is it going to be one of them performances where we're just like putting our body on the line? And that's what I felt like, even though we weren't going to do anything, going forward, it felt like it did feel at some points like, Cody's being a rock. We're really going to just dig in and sort of try and grind out a clean sheet here. But yeah, it didn't happen.
I mean, part of the issue, you know, you've got Semedo playing out of position, theoretically. I know he can play, but for the majority, the vast majority of the season, he's played on the right and he's caught out positionally. And you've got Hoover, who didn't have a sparkling game anyway. At the end of the day, all the cameras look at Cody falling over and being made a fool of by Kane's amazing touch. It's just sloppy. At the end of the day, it's just sloppy. Like, it just... Call it a learning curve playing as a four, because as Gully's mentioned on a few occasions on his excellent analysis episodes, the pitch is wider for the defenders at the back. They're not positionally where they used to be when they're playing as a four, and they still haven't had that many games as a four. So sloppiness is going to come into it until they just have longer to play as a four. Unfortunately, we are going to concede goals that can be avoided.
I mean, the lines come out briefly, didn't they? VAR for that one, but there was no danger. Was there really, Matt, for that one being called offside?
Not really. Not really.
I think it was quite clear. So I was waiting when the goal went in. To be fair, I was waiting because when they showed you the quick replay, I was looking at shoulder blades. I was thinking, no. But then I don't think it was even referred to initially, was it, on screen until well into the second half? But I held out a little bit of hope. But moving on to the second half, there's a bit of a post bonanza. I think both Ali and Kane hit the post in quick succession. Second half, Kim. I mean, second half we didn't really offer much goal threat, did we? But for their goal, are we going to be in group agreement here that we're pointing our finger at Hoover for? But I don't know what he was telling me what he was doing at that point, because he seemed to have lost their challenge. It was clearly in his favour.
Yeah, he was trying as it almost felt like, was he trying to shepherd the ball out of play, that it was never gonna sort of go. I don't really understand what he was doing, and I think, you know, he's young, isn't he? So I don't want to just completely bash him, but he you just think, just don't do anything flash at that point. Just clear your line, sort of thing. I think that you can only blame him, sort of, really, for that goal. You know, there's no other player you could point your finger at, I don't think, personally.
And George, do you think there are any defenders who slow to the rebound as well from the shot coming in, or was it purely a case that our defenders were caught on the back foot for when the cross come in? The save was made, and then I think again, Cody and Sace kind of was just caught on the hop, and that well-known goal predator Højbjerg was there to slot it in.
I just think it was. I think again, you look at it, so many faults in that whole passage of play, and even down to Patricio. Really, like, you know, he's got a good enough hand on it. He should be pushing it wider goal. Like, you don't push it straight. You know, you don't push it straight back out to your 6 yard box. Just for me, the thing that really rankles with me the most is that we just rolled over and had our bellies tickled that second half. Like, we never once threatened to get back into the game. Like, our tactic was very much get the ball to Adama and hope something happens, and just magic something. Like, and it's just, yeah, like I say, like, you know, there's no point moaning. Like, the season's over. It's been over for a few weeks. We all know we need to strengthen and improve, but I just want to see a bit of fight. And for me, that second half, there was zero. So it's hard to read when people are saying about, you know, we need to change the manager, or we need to change so-and-so at the team. You look at it and you go, and again, I'm not Nuno out by any stretch of imagination. I do think there's a conversation to be had there, and I understand why people do. But it's hard for you to stick up for it when you're watching such an abject performance. It's almost like resigning yourself to the fact of this is it. And it's quite sad, really, compared to the wave we've had for the last few years, that feel quite flat watching Wolves at the minute. And it's not something I've associated myself feeling with this team. So yeah, like, we just need a pre-season, and like we referenced before on here, I think it's our biggest pre-season we've had under Nuno and Fosen.
Matt, where do you stand on Hoover? Not where you stand when Hoovering. I mean, where do you stand on Kiana Hoover? In that, I mean, normally Semedo would start on the right, and then we've got enough. Well, you know, normally Aitnora on the left. But I mean, he has to play to get experience.
Yep.
I mean, do you see potential in him? Is he someone that we, you know, that we're there to stick with potentially?
I think there's a player there. Of course, there's a player there, and he's been naive. And what you have to realise is there's clearing your lines, but then there's also holding onto the ball. You clear the lines, you pass the ball to a Spurs defender, and the wave starts again. If he can hold onto the ball, get a pass away to a midfielder, we can have possession. He will be told by Nuno not to just give the ball away cheaply. Do you know what I mean? There's absolutely nothing comes from just hoofing the ball away for an opposition defender to pick up and then pass back to their midfield. Nothing good comes of that. He'll have been told to keep the ball as much as possible, and he'd have felt that he could have kept the ball in that scenario and then played the pass, and then we could have started an attack. He's been caught out, though, and it happens. It happens. The issues are far bigger than Hoover and his naivety on the pitch in that. How many times have we seen teams go one down? Okay, they go one down, so they pick up their game from an attacking point of view. Then they get amazing good fortune, like two shots going off the woodwork, and now, you know, now they sense blood and now they attack. You take that good fortune sometimes, and you take anything that you can get to spur you on to think, actually, this might be my day, this might be our game. And it was the exact opposite. It was retreating further into a shell. Now, that's a culture issue within the squad. That's not individuals. That's a collective. And that should be the bigger issue that we're concerned about, and how Nuno turns that around, because you should be having players that are hungry as anything on that pitch. And it didn't feel like that in this game. Now, it's the end of the season. It's been a long, old season for some, but it's not been a long, old season for Vitinha. It's not been a long, old season for Gibbs-White. Do you know what I mean? I expect more. Now, Vitinha, I think, gets a doctor's note in some way. He gets a bit of extenuating circumstances because he isn't a 10. He's not a 10. He should be playing a little further back, in the mould of a Matinho, in the mould of a Neves, but he has to mop up from an ageing midfield behind him and an off-form midfield behind him in Dendonka and Matinho, who at this point aren't offering anything. And I feel sorry for the lad, because this is exactly what happened to Gibbs-White. He had one great game against Arsenal. Match of the day, go mental on him. And then he dips off form. Vitinha, he's got his name in the headlights. He's expected to put in a 10 out of 10 performance every game. And it's not going to happen. He's a kid. He's a young kid. It's unrealistic expectations, and then he has to mop up for Matinho and then Donker shit show again. I feel sorry for the lad. But there's a cultural issue there in the squad that you should be up for every game. And I know it's easy for us to say, well, they should be, they get paid loads, blah, 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 blah. But there's definitely an element of throwing in the towel, you know, giving up while you're on the bench. And
there seems to almost be this kind of like cliche, isn't it? When you get to in a position of teams like ours, where you've got nothing to play for, so to speak, you're either quote unquote on the beach, you know, you're not, the tenacity is not there, or the other version of a team who's not playing for anything can be, it's the cliche comes out as, oh, they're even more dangerous now because they've got nothing to play for. So now you'll see the real team. And you think, well, is it as simple as falling into those cliches? Because I mean I certainly don't see us falling into the latter of those cliches of being, you know, playing with a handbrake off or being more dangerous.
Now, for me, a lot of it this season, if we talk about analogies, it's almost like in boxing, we're almost like a journeyman who's just like, with a punch, you know, like we're there, we get paid for sticking around for 12 rounds, but we're never going to offer anything. It's like, just, you know, you stick around, you get, you know, stick around, we'll be there, we won't really compete, you're never going to win the game. And like today, it felt very much like that. It just felt like not any point from minute 1 to 90 today did I ever feel like we tried to win the football match. And that, for me, is just not good enough either, for being honest with you.
And just to follow up on that, I agree, because there was 2 points today that really disappointed me. One was, I felt like our team was going down as a collective too easily. Like, I felt like any little foul, we were like looking for the free kick. You know, Matinho, Silva, like virtually the whole team at some point, I felt, just went down too easily looking for the free kick. And I get, you know, that's modern football, but I just think we were on the beach, we didn't want it. And the second thing was, so many times Adama was sort of the only Wolves player in the picture. I was just thinking, okay, Adama's the fastest player on the pitch. You know, you get that. But you didn't see any of the sort of midfielders, any of them busting his butt to get in that box because, you know, Adama's pretty good. He's getting better at putting a ball in on someone's head or just laying it back to a Morgan Gibbs-White of a Tinia. And for me, I just felt like they just weren't there. There were, you've got to say there were on the beach today. They weren't putting in, you know, really like all blazing performance for me, just generally as a collective, I think. And that was one of the biggest issues.
We've been on the aren't even going to see a beach this summer, are they? They're going to be in the Euros.
But for a lot of games of this season, we could say we've been on the beach for all year. Like West Ham, when we lost 4-0, like Liverpool, Anfield, we've thrown the towel so many times. And like, for me, in a game, when it comes to people having this conversation about the management and the squad and foes and stuff, the biggest question for me to ask anyone who, whether you're Nuno in, Nuno out, is can you recognise this Wolves team from the team that came up from the Championship? I.e., we've got no identity. I don't know what our best 11 is. I don't know who's going to play week on week. It's just, for me, I'm just lost. Like, this isn't the team that we've come to know and love in terms of, you know, that first season in the Premier League, like when we got to the FA Cup semi-final, it was like unbelievable. Went toe-to-toe with everyone and you just knew we had something about us. This year, it's been, quite frankly, it's been embarrassing. And like I say, wherever you sit on the pendulum, on the spectrum of Nuno in, Nuno out, etc., can anyone actually tell me what our identity is as a football club at the minute? Because I couldn't tell you. Could not tell you from week.
There's an element of, you know, adapt or die. Everything has to change. You know, football changes so quickly in terms of what's in, what's out, what's sexy, what's not. Was it naive of us to try a new system without a pre-season? Potentially. But do things need to change before you just get caught out? And, you know, look at Traore at first in his Wolves career. Unbelievable, because no one knew how to manage him, but now people know how to manage him because they stick two or three men on him. So he's had to change his game to be more impactful. So, you know, potentially Wolves have had to do that to have any sort of continued success. I think the issue is now, I do not envy Nuno one bit going into this pre-season, because there is so much pressure on him for success now, because again, doesn't matter where you lie on the spectrum now, Nuno in, Nuno out, Nuno indifferent. You have to take into account injuries, long season, COVID, the rest of it. Whether you think that fans make a difference in the stadium or not, whether you think that the fact that it's not been a normal season, that everybody else has had the same season, it doesn't matter. It's extenuating circumstances this season. It should be struck from the records, apart from the fact that, you know what I mean? But this is so much pressure for success over the five games at the start of the season. You know, there'll be no murmurings of, okay, we threw the cups because the squad's threadbare. There'll be none of that this year. There'll be expectations of through the roof, and people will be calling for his head after five games if we don't get off to a great start. And I just don't envy the man at all going into the next season. And I think that pressure is showing on the pitch. I really do. I feel that at the moment, it just looks exhausted, knackered, can't wait for the game to be over. And that's an issue. And I don't think it's necessarily anybody's fault. But at the same time, you know, you expect professionals to be professional.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I mean, I think there's a lot of, you can see sometimes it just doesn't look fun anymore for some of the players on the pitch, does it? It just seems like they're going through the motions, almost as if we're there by numbers, essentially. But yeah, I would agree with you. I think just better that this, as soon as the season's over, we can just breathe a sigh of relief and then hopefully start again in August with a full stadium or near as damn it. And then just, you know, hopefully we've got a good summer behind us. I mean, that's a whole separate part in itself about what we're going to do this summer or what money we are or aren't likely to spend in the current climate. But I want to bring in some of the Twitter corner questions here, actually, before we finish up on the game. And One thing we should mention, actually, that happened with about 10 minutes to go. Stu probably spaffed all over his room because Theo Corbiani got off the bench and come on. He would look like that South Park meme of just Stu juice everywhere by his screen. He's probably still wiping himself down, but not too much to dwell on with his performance because he only got his 10 minutes. But Ash Dolan has tweeted in to say, apart from young Corbiani, who is your favourite Canadian? He's picking Bret Hart. That's an obvious choice. But Matt, I'm going to come to you first. Who gets your vote as your favourite Canadian?
Having done a podcast with him, Tom Stade, the comedian, he's a very nice guy and incredibly funny as well. So I'm going to go for Tom Stade because he's incredibly charming and he'd make a nun blush with his swearing as well, which I always like.
He was one that was, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't he the one that made famous who did the Bilston Market
sketches ago? The meat van guy.
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, very, very good.
With his bag of faggots.
I've got a bag full of faggots.
Yeah. Kim, who gets your vote as your favourite Canadian?
I've genuinely just had to Google find Canadian. I literally couldn't think of any. And there's some quite interesting, quite famous people, actually. It comes up, and again, this is Google, so I don't know if these are all true. But Jim Carrey, Celine Dion, Justin Bieber, didn't know he was Canadian, Drake, Avril Lavigne, you know, we could go on here. But I think my favourite one, just quickly looking through the list, is Kim Cattrall from Sex and the City, without sounding too girly. Yes, she gets my vote.
I can't relate too much to Sex and the City. Never watched it. But George, what about you?
I don't know. Well, I would say Bret Hart, but you know, you can't talk about wrestling on here anymore, apparently. So I'd go for someone like, I think modern day, it's got to be Alfonso Davies, hasn't he? I just think he's really cool and a phenomenal footballer. But going back a little bit, I used to watch F1 back in the day. I don't watch it anymore. But Jacques Villeneuve, he was a French-Canadian, I believe. So I'll go for Jacques Villeneuve. Yeah, then we'll go with that.
I'll probably go for Avril Lavigne because I was infatuated with her when I was in my younger years. I wanted to be her skater boy.
But she said, see you later, boy.
Yeah. Dean Marsden, steering it back, resting it back to the game a little bit. Apparently, Dean Marsden, a friend of the show, didn't watch the game. So he asks you, can each of you sum the game up in just one word, Matt? What do you reckon? We'll put you on the spot slightly. The other two have got time to prepare. But Matt, if you could use one word for the game, what would it be?
Ambivalent.
Oh, like it.
I'm just going to quickly Google if that's the word I meant. Because I'm not entirely sure it is. Ambivalent meaning. Google, having mixed feelings or contradictory ideas about something or someone. Some loved her, someone hated her, few were ambivalent about her. So, you know, I've got mixed feelings.
There you go. Not just complete apathy and dread, it was ambivalent. Yes. Mm-hmm. Kim, if you quickly Google the word, you can choose.
How did you know? Yeah, I've Googled quite a lot on this podcast so far. The best word, I think, is demoralising, I think. That just sums it up nicely. Just the whole season, actually, I think. Not just this game, just quite demoralising.
It's just added a bit extra demoralisation to the already demoralised mood that you're in. George, what's your one word for Dean?
I know Dean's. I think I saw Dean's on holiday, so hopefully he's having a nice little time down there, and he's done well to escape the game today. I'm going to cheat a little bit and just go with something that's three syllables. It's two words. Fucking wank.
You didn't have to Google that, did you?
Watching these two Google, I don't need to pretend I'm on Countdown. I'll just tell it how it is. Fucking shit, mate.
You qualified. Two words. No.
Some more football questions. We've had a hat trick of questions from a friend of the show, Nag, at KingWolf84. So, goalkeeper chat. assuming that Ruddy is going to go at the end of the season, are we looking for a young understudy to Rui, or are we looking for a Ruddy-style goalkeeper, like a seasoned pro, to come in as number two? And depending on your answer, who are you going to go for? And I'm going to switch it up. I'm going to go to George first, just to get your thoughts on this one.
I think it all depends on if Patricio goes, because there's a lot of rumours that he's going to go to Roma. I think he's got 12 months left on his contract. It all just seems to make sense in terms of Mourinho going there. And
why would he pick Roma over Wolverhampton?
Who knows, eh? Who knows? So I think we'll probably need to, I reckon we'll probably get a younger goalie in as number one. And then I'd take a veteran number two. Like, I mentioned this a few weeks ago, and I got a bit of pelters just because of his old... Well, I suppose he's played for every other Midlands club other than us, but I'd take like someone like Ben Foster on a year, that genuinely to play to be number two, if we got you know, an established number one. Not saying he'd come to us, but I know he's leaving Watford in the summer. And I think we'll talk about Man City getting him. Yeah, I think that's probably what I'd do. I think if the problem is we're looking at the whole team, and I think the whole spine needs a refresh, but if Patricio goes, that's as big as the goalkeeper's as big a position as anything on the pitch to fill. So if he does go for the money, they talk about like 8 to 10 million euro to get someone of his quality in, you probably have to spend three times that, I think, personally, to replace him like for like.
Yeah, it'd be a big blow if we go. Keane, what's your thoughts? Would you be happy with like a Sondergaard or a Scott Carson?
I actually think, and I don't want this to happen, but I think I agree with George. I think that Patricio actually might go. And although that's not for me, I think we could potentially replace him with someone like Sam Johnston. I know in the group chat people were saying, oh, we might want to just have him as number two. Well, he ain't going to come as number two, is he, after the good season that he's had. So someone like him, maybe as a number one, and then just sort of get a young backup goalie. Someone like maybe a Tom Heaton. I mean, that's, you know, when he played for Villa before his injury, he was pretty good, and he's not going to get in the team over Martinez anytime soon, is he? So I think, to be honest, I think the biggest concern is the number one goalie, never mind sort of, you know, the number two goalie. I'd expect Ruddy will go. I mean, is that being confirmed? But I'd like to see sort of a younger goalie come in as a backup to challenge for the number one spot.
So, Matt, what's your thoughts on the issue? Potentially could be losing two goalkeepers this summer. What would you do?
Well, first of all, we've got Sarkic at Shrewsbury at the moment on loan, and apparently he's doing okay there. And sooner or later, unless we're literally using him as an investment to sell, he's going to have to come into the fold somewhere down the line. So do we recall him, give him at least time spent around the first team, if not at least playing, if we keep Patricio? If Patricio goes, you're exactly right. You've got to spend top money for top keepers these days. And that's just the way it is. It's not like you can skimp on keepers. So it's going to be a difficult one. I'd like to think if Patricio goes, that will be the beginning of the rest of the old guard moving on. You know what I mean? It seems like the natural progression of things, but you'd absolutely want to keep him. So hopefully we do. And it just be the fact that we bring in a young understudy as opposed to having to make a first team signing.
I do follow, like many others probably, follow Patricio's missus on Instagram. And I think she did a Q&A a few days ago. There's loads of people asking the questions about, do you like living in the UK? And she said, yes. And then someone asked, is Rui staying? And she just put the shrug emoji. Like, I don't know. So who knows?
Yes, you do. You like Rome. You've already got an apartment. You do know what's going on. You're leaving Tottenham for Rome.
She's already on Rightmove Rome, already looking for nice apartments.
I've already put my offer at King's Winford Sports Shop to put Buffon on the back of my T-shirt, and the back of my goalkeeper shirt from this year.
And then Nags, one of the follow-up question was, would you take either top six glory, but you lose the connectivity with traditional roots and fans, or would you take 7th to 12th, the odd cup run, but you keep the connections? Kim, what would you choose out of those two?
7th to 12th, I think. After this whole, you know, pandemic, I think we've got to sort of come back to reality quick and just be grateful that hopefully next season we'll get back to normal, and that I actually think that the crowd will be right behind the team again, and I think that will show again in our performances. And I don't want to just bang on about it, because I get that it's the same for everyone, but especially at home, I think the crowd did, you know, spur us on against, you know, the big teams that where we had loads of success. So yeah,
what do you reckon, George? Will you be coining the glory but losing the fans, or be bang average but the fans love you?
I think, I don't know. Like, if I'm being honest with you, okay, I'll tell you what Fosen want to do. Fosen will take first place, move the Molyneux to the M54 island, £100 a ticket, £1,000 a season ticket, casino, hotel. That's what they want.
The question, though, was it?
I think I kind of want it as well. Let the whole thing burn and just watch the meltdown. I know, I'm joking.
You know, watch Wolverines.
No, the thing is, though, it's all, we spoke about this on the preview show on Thursday, and I think that fans have got to get used to the idea that with success is going to come all the commercial stuff onto all that fluffy stuff. So you can't have one without the other. So what fans, because we've been so ingrained, Wolves being like a, well, second tier championship club and having this, you know, cult following, I guess. I don't think fans are going to be happy until that happens again. So, you know, I'd rather, to be honest with you, you're looking at, like, you know, teams like Charlton back in the day, and do you really just want mediocrity in the Premier League, like, for years upon years upon years? Like, if you're not going to go for it, I would much rather go down. And I know that sounds stupid and cliched, but, you know, I don't want to just exist. If we're going to go for it, I want to go for it. Matt's falling.
That's got something to say about this in a minute.
Yeah, no, it's fine. But no, in all seriousness, though, I want us to be as successful as we can be. So if that means we've got to maybe lose a few privileges, then I think it's just par for the course. I think this is going to happen, and fans need to suck it up. Like, ticket prices carry on increasing. And yeah, I haven't paid £45 for Man United, and I probably wouldn't pay £45 in a half empty stadium. But if that was the going rate and we were Champions League side, I'd pay £50 to go. But the quality on the pitch needs to match what the quality of the ticket price is. Well, that's some sort of an elongated answer, but there you go.
go on, Matt, take it away. What's your stance?
No. I'm going back to the original question. It's not a question. Connectivity's already gone.
So it has gone, yeah.
It doesn't make a difference, because the connectivity is already gone, and we're going to finish 15th or 12th or whatever it is that we're going to finish. I think the issue is there that I love this term legacy fans, because it's exactly what it is. I think now we are seeing, and rightly so, because they're a business for a reason. If I'd spunked as much money on something, I'd be expecting returns as well. No one does it for a charity. I've got no issue with that at all. But I think people need to realise that the Fosen and have an obligation to one thing and one thing only, and that's their shareholders. And they don't have an obligation to Wolverhampton. They don't have an obligation to the city. Everything that's come so far has been a nice side effect or symptom of the machine that is corporate Fosen. And that's fine. People need to understand that. And fan power and things like that, and everything that's going on with the ESL, I think has made people realise, yes, there is a place for fan power in football. But I think I also, and I'm guilty of it, just as anybody, like the whole, you know, moaning for the sake of moaning and everything else. But the whole ticket price thing that's gone on recently, losing so much energy to it at the moment. And it gets to the point where, listen, if people are going to pay it, and that's fine, but you can't, you know, let me put it another way. You've got people now who voted for Brexit who didn't think that freedom of movement wouldn't mean that they can't now be an expat over in Spain. Just think about what it is that you're supporting. Do you know what I mean? People just need to understand that what they're buying into is what is to come. So if the ticket price thing, if you want to pay £45 a go, absolutely, be my guest. It's not going to bother me any way, shape or form. But people need to understand that they're buying into something, that there is no reverse on this. Ticket prices are never going to go down. So if you accept it now, you're accepting it for the future. What was that song by REM? If we tolerate this, then your children will be next. Well, the children will be next will be about 100 quid a game. Yeah, there we go. Off me soap.
I was going to say, on the ticket thing, though, it's gone to category three as well, hasn't it? You never have thought it had gone down to category three.
And I think that
that shows it, doesn't it? Yeah.
I think that says something, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that shows that people aren't, you know, categorically okay with it. And that's fine. So much energy's been lost to it, though, I feel.
It's a good job that there weren't more than 4,500 tickets, because if there was probably over 10,000 tickets, I don't think they would sell, personally.
That'd be even more embarrassing, wouldn't it? Yeah. Can't even sell the amount.
That would send out more of a message, I hope, wouldn't it? But they're obviously going to sell the 4,500 tickets, so...
If we had more, they'd give them free away, they'd give free tickets for the NHS to show that they're doing a good thing. And then to give everyone a free lucky dip in the raffle they've been doing on the club shop as well, to only win a home shirt.
And a £2 pair of socks. All right, well, that'll wrap up nicely for this part of the show. We're going to take a quick break, and then we come back. We're going to preview our penultimate game of the season away to Everton.
Hi, Richard here. Before you go back to hearing us dissect the latest Wolves news, some really shoehorn Simpsons references, a bit of 90s film action, of course, a bit of wrestling, I just want to do a quick shout out for our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media. Now, they've done a fantastic job on the Wolves Fancast website, wolvesfancast.com, please go check it out. But they're not just web designers, they're a creative agency that cover all your design needs, from websites, brochures and signage to marketing, logo design and branding. There's basically nothing they can't do marketing wise, so make sure you check them out at pixelyetimedia.com, and I'll let you get back to enjoying the show.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to the Wolves Fancast. We've got our penultimate game of the season coming up on Wednesday, I think it is. Someone will correct me if I'm wrong. We're away to Everton. There will be some fans back in the stadium for this one. So we're playing an Everton team who are trying to keep their European ambitions alive. I think at the minute... they're looking most likely to qualify for the most illustrious sounding Europa Conference League tournament, probably playing some Latvian plumbers somewhere. But how do we see this game going, guys? Because we just talked about our ambivalence for the previous game and the team in general. Are we going to see more of the same again? Matt, what's your initial thoughts for this game?
I don't know. We'd be better off reading the star signs and the Express and Star to try and get a grasp of what the squad's going to look like. You know, it could be anything. I think, as we know with Nuno, he very much is, he'll give you one chance under not fantastic circumstances. And if you don't pass that test, you will be banished into footballing obscurity for a month or two ahead. So I'd be surprised to see Hoover play. I don't know. He probably sees this as a justification to go back to normal and just play a normal bog standard 11 that we would normally, and then make a defensive substitution when we should be attacking too late.
I mean, I was looking at a head-to-head record earlier, Kim. You can't really draw anything from it, to be honest. Drew, one loss, one loss. How do you see it going? Because I think from what you said earlier, we pretty much on the beach or would like to be on it. Everton have got something to play for. So is it only going to go one way in your mind? Is it going to be a tough afternoon for us?
Probably, to be honest, without sounding really negative. I'm just looking at Everton's last sort of five games. And again, they're all very tight. You know, I mean, you say Everton have got something to play for, but I suppose they've got the Europa League to play for, but, you know, they're not going to make top four, top five now. So I think they're yet to play against Sheffield United tonight. So I can see a 0-0, to be honest. I think...
God, don't say that.
I genuinely think it could be worse than the game today. I think that they don't, they're not exactly the most entertaining team to watch either. So, and I can see Nuno just going back to basics. And I hope I'm wrong, because I'd rather just carry on and lose miserably rather than just go back to, dare I say, a back five, and I hope he doesn't, or just, you know, put Moutinho, Neves, Dendonker, all the old guards sort of back in. I mean, the only player that I'd like to see come back in is Bolly, just because he's had like a lack of game time this season, really. So it's just one of those. I think the game's pretty dead from both teams' perspective, so I'm not, I almost haven't got my hopes high at all, so then you're not left as disappointed, I suppose.
George, what's your thoughts on it? Are you gonna watch the game, or are you going to take a dog for a walk instead?
The problem is I've got to do Instagram Live and I'm on the podcast, so I've got to watch the game, unfortunately.
Pray for George.
I don't know whether to just get a bag of magic mushrooms in and just see if that enhances the experience. honestly, I'm just not looking forward to it at all. And I think that, in all seriousness, it could be another Burnley scenario where we just get rolled over. If we play like we did the second half today, with like no lack of effort or even attempt to try and get back in the game, like, who we fall in, like, they'll beat us, and they'll beat us like comfortably as well. The thing is, though, like I said, they're still playing for that, I guess, the European, well, I suppose they can still get sixth, but if they come seventh, you've got that UEFA Conference League, and like, I think that's a poison chalice, you know, for anyone who gets that next year. And I've never really talked to Everton as a football club. I don't know what it is. I just don't really like them. So I do kind of hope they get seventh, and I hope they just rot, because I don't know what it is about them. I just don't really like them that much. Same as Arsenal. Just got to like a, I don't know, just don't like them. So if they get seventh, yeah, crack on. If they beat us and get seventh, great.
I was always the opposite, really, to be honest. I always quite liked Everton, at least for a small period of time. I think it's when Les got signed for him. I kind of followed them a little bit. But, I mean, they've got some quite dangerous players. And obviously, Calvert-Lewin, Richarlison, Sigurdsson. I don't know if James Rodriguez will be playing, but I'll get some predictions from us all on the show there. So, Matt, how do you think it's going to go?
I mean, I don't want to predict a loss, so I'll go 1-1. I think, you got to remember how good a squad Spurs are as well. It's not like they were lucky. They battered us for long periods of this game, and Everton aren't as good a squad generally speaking. So I'm going to be positive. I think we're going to play a more resolute team perhaps, and we'll get a draw out of it, 1-1.
Kim, are you really going to stick with your 0-0?
No, I've changed my mind actually within 2 minutes. I think we'll try and go back to basics, and I think we'll just try and be defensively solid, but I think we'll still lose 2-1.
All positive so far. George, what do you reckon?
I'm going to copy and paste what I said I thought this game would be. I thought it'd be against Spurs today. I think it's going to be very open. Two attacking-minded teams. We've got nothing to play for. There's going to be lots of chances, lots of creativity. And I'm going to go for 2-2. So, again, probably not going to happen, but I'm just going to pretend it will, because it'll get me up for Instagram Live and the podcast on Wednesday. So, yeah, really exciting 2-2 draw.
I need some of that excitement as well, because I think I'm on the pod and Instagram Live. So
I'll put you in touch with my dealer for the mushrooms.
You best get them mushrooms in, yeah? Maybe need something a bit more stronger as well. Right, we're going to finish as ever. We've got quite a few Twitter corners to get through, and some more jovial questions has come through. I'm going to start off with our very own Richard Hobbs, who wants to know what each of our first car was. So, Matt, what was your first car?
I had a Vauxhall Corsa that, because I was naive when it came to buying cars, I didn't know that you had to check the logbook, or I didn't know how to check about things like whether it had been an accident or not. So it had been written off. So every time you put full left lock on, something fell off. something quite critical to them, the mechanics of the car. So
the engine,
like the drive shaft or something. I'm not very mechanically minded. So I went from that pretty quickly to a Citroen Saxo Forte.
Go on, Kim, over to you. What was your first motor?
So I thought I was the bee's knees. I had a Citroen C2 1.2 litre, and it was the slowest car you could ever imagine. I just remember like pulling up at islands and you literally having to like floor it just to make sure like I escaped another car. So
thank
you. Yeah, so like I kept that for a few years, almost ran it into the ground and then got barely anything for it. So moved up in the world to an Audi A1 now.
Oh, that's a partridge. Mm, Ben, George, what was your first car?
I had a Corsa as well, same as Matt. Silver Corsa. And I brought it from a garage. And again, I'll be honest with you, just don't know anything about cars, to be honest with you. So I just went for the safe option of, right, I was going to get a Corsa. Got a Corsa, and then within about a month, there was like it started flooding from the passenger footwell. There was like a leak. I got to the car one day, and there's just a puddle. And just stunk of like damp, and never really ever got it fixed properly. In terms of the guy kept taking it back to the garage and kept bodging it, and I had that car for about 3-4 years, and me and my mates always said that we'd always try and push it off the top of a cliff. Basically, that was the way it was going to go. But someone ended up paying me like £250 for it, and I can't believe it. So that was my first car, and then very in between as like I think that your first car always is, you know, stupid stuff like that.
Yeah, mine was a K-Reg Renault Clio I bought off a chap in Gornal. And when I got it home, I put a wolf sticker on the back window. And then when I drove it, then there's a big puddle of some substance underneath where the car was sitting for a while. It was an old car. It was a K-Reg. It only had 4 gears. Didn't have a 5th gear, this car. That just gives you a clear error. I mean, not K-Reg is like 93-ish or something like that. In fact, my first 3 cars were all Renault Clios. I had some sort of infatuation with them, and I had a smash in all 3 of them. All my fault as well. I'm just not good. I'm obviously more careful now, but back then I couldn't pick a good car and I drove shit as well. Keep on the car theme again, our own Andy Gillard has asked, what's your favourite film that is primarily about cars? So, Jordan, I'm going to come to you first in this one.
I don't really know much primarily about a car. Sort of gearing up to the Fast and Furious answer, but I don't want to answer with that because I don't really think they're that good. And the later ones are like action. Can I just say Brum? I know it's not a film, but I like Brum. And, you know,
what's that?
Brum, can't you remember the TV? It's TV show, Brum.
Cowboy.
I can't remember that.
What?
Have I missed out?
Yeah, so it was on BBC, and it used to be like a car. You used to drive around Birmingham on the canals, and like used to go and solve all sorts.
I thought it was called Brum just because it was a car, not because he drove around Birmingham as well.
Yeah. he used to solve loads of problems for people around Birmingham city centre. Like a modern-day Peaky Blinder. Brum, yeah. There you go, yeah. Him. I'll go with Brum.
For the YouTube viewers, I am holding up Brum. This is a revelation to me. Never knew this existed. Our first episode date, 1991.
Yeah.
Sorry, I've never... 66 episodes of it as well. No, I've never knew anything about it. Kim, what's your favourite film about cars?
I suppose one of the obvious ones is the film Cars, the animation type one, but I don't actually think that's that good. I'm going to be quite boring and say I do actually like Fast and Furious 5. I think that's a really good film, and I like a bit of Vin Diesel, so yeah, that's me.
You know, can I ask a question about Fast and Furious? Like, there's how many of them now are there? 8 films? Is it 8 Fast and Furious, or is there 7?
It feels like Saw. They just keep going.
What are they doing? Is it just racing each other or what?
No,
Fast and Furious.
The 5th one is like the storyline's really good because it's not just cars. But then I think after then I gave up because then the 6th, 7th were crap. So really.
Go on, Matt, take us away. What's your favourite film about cars?
Herbie Fully Loaded. Herbie Fully Loaded with Lindsay Lohan. No.
Straight in there.
No, so cheap plug here, but Cage Fighting at Cage Fighting Pod on Twitter. We just recorded an episode on Drive Angry, Nick Cage film, which is, as you expect, it's like a high octane film about cars loosely. But there's a scene in it where Nick Cage is getting down and dirty in a hotel room and ends up shooting people whilst being ridden by a barmaid. And he literally, and then he gets tasered. She gets an orgasm through the tasering, and he's just shooting people around, and it's just absolutely wild. And it's a class film, and there's lots of cars in it. So, Drive Angry.
Just gonna make a note of that for later. what time of the film was that scene in at all? We have got a slightly left field question here from Lee, who his Twitter handle is at Mr. Carbohydrate. Would you rather have teeth and no lips, or lips and no teeth? And you're stuck with your choice, and you can't have surgery or false teeth, etc., etc. So, Kim, I want to come to you first in this one. Would you rather have teeth and no lips, or lips and no teeth?
Well, if you didn't have any teeth, then you wouldn't be able to eat, would you? So you'd be virtually dead. So,
well, you'd cane the soup, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah, no, I'd rather keep
your teeth. You can go to town on candy floss. Or like...
Yeah, definitely keep your teeth. It's not even a question, is it?
You won't be able to have the big soups, though. George, would you rather have teeth and no lips, or lips and no teeth?
I'd only say, you've got to think like this, like, exposed teeth. Like, I don't really think teeth are, like, great to look at anyway. And imagine if you've got, like, some manky teeth. Because if you can't have cosmetics as well, I had a brace. Like, I'm thinking about, like, braceless me, 14 years old, without any lips. Like, that wouldn't be good for anyone. You know what? I'll go for lips, no teeth, I think. Just because, imagine having, like, exposed teeth all the time. Like, I think
it'd be really horror film?
Weird. Yeah, I think it looked really weird. I don't know how you'd eat, like you say. I think you'd have to have processed everything. Or just outright
being vain over being practical there.
Yeah, I'm shallow, Kim. Right, very shallow.
When you're out, no one's seen
them. Yeah, but I think you just have to cane loads of calippos. That's how you'd live.
Matt, you've had longest to ponder on this. What's your thoughts?
It wasn't. You could have come to me, and I'll be quicker than my Herbie Fully Loaded. Answer: I'd do without the teeth, easy peasy, because your gums go hard. Your gums go hard without teeth. Old people can eat steak because your gums just go harder, and it ends up being a faux set of teeth, basically. So I don't think that's as big an issue as people think it would be. So teeth out. I want to keep my luscious lips where they are.
And a question from our very own Stu, who's asked, Do you think Nuno ever learned to ride a bike, or will he stabilise as permanent? So, George, was he one of these kids who had permanent stabilisers?
No, I think he had stabilisers off, but I think he only had like four gears. And I think his mum always told him to hold the brake as well. So I think he definitely had no stabilisers. He's got the ability there, but I think he just, he always squeezed the handbrake at all times, permanently. I don't really,
Matt, any advance on the, Matt Kim, any advance on the Stu's far-reaching question there?
Basically, he took his stabilisers off, but he never took and passed his cycling proficiency test. So to get to that next level of riding a bike, you need to pass your cycling proficiency test, and Nuno doesn't have that. Whether that's an analogy for Nuno's career with us, I'll leave that to your imagination.
He's still looking for those solutions, isn't he, Kim? Still looking for those solutions for his bike riding.
To be fair, I reckon he hasn't got his stabilisers on now, but he's got his both hands firmly on, depending on the type of bike, on the brakes. So, like, he's ready to push that those brakes quickly. So, or if he's got them on the, what are those bikes where you've got the brakes on the pedals? I think that's more of a, yeah, I think he's got his feet ready to, like, just, emergency stop.
Can I extend this question out to everyone? Just come to me. So Nuno, right, he goes to Centre Parks. Right. Does he take his own bike with him or does he rent them from the bike shack? So does he take his own bike and load it on the car or would he just rent one for 30 quid for the week, as you do? Go in there.
He'd take it with him. He'd be prepared. Yeah.
He's got his own special bike to take with him. He's got double brakes.
He only trusts his own bike. He doesn't like new, inexperienced bikes that he's got no experience with.
And Max Kilman's working beyond the kiosk. I thought, doctor,
still left him on red. Right, we've run out of time there. So unfortunately, we haven't got time to answer Little Dan's question on our thoughts on Israel and Palestine. So we're going to leave it there for this week. Thanks to Matt, Kim, and Jord for getting us through this podcast on that god awful Spurs game. You know where to find us on social media. On Twitter, on Facebook, on YouTube, Instagram, across all platforms. Go and check us out, please. It's all that remains is to say is catch you later and we'll see you after the Everton game. See you later. Bye.